Hello there. Welcome to the final Rahulastapur Rahumol Extra. This one is about the shape of things to come with Alex Krotowski, who's a fantastic journalist and broadcaster. Very funny. So I hope you're going to enjoy this. This is the last one. I don't know if we're going to have anything to fill in the gaps between now and June, but the Rahulastapur will be back in June. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com if you want to buy tickets. The first one's already selling well. We don't have any guests in yet, but I'm going to start booking them pretty soon. But it's all worth booking ahead. They're all good. And the people who are less well-known, often much better than the people who are well-known, in my opinion. You can catch me on tour. In the meantime, I've got loads more dates to come. 25th of March, I'm in... Sorry, 30th of March, I'm in Maidstone. 31st of March, Winchester. 1st of April, Stafford. 2nd of April, Cardiff. Massive room. Please tell your Welsh seaweed-eating friends. I don't know why they're not all coming. It's not like I've been with them. Oh, back, I am from Wales. That's how they speak there. And then Hereford, Andover, Camberley, Radlett, Leeds, Wolverhampton, Barnsley, Harrogate, Hartford, Bournemouth, Brighton, Reading, Exeter, Coventry, Warwick Arts Centre, Swindon, bubbled in Norwich, Dorking, Belfast, Dublin, Monmouth, Oxford. I think that's maybe sold out. St Albans, Shrewsbury, and then three dates at the Leicester Square Theatre, 8th, 9th, 10th of June. Then I'll be cracking on to the Edinburgh Fringe, where I'm doing a show called Oh Frig, I'm 50. At the Pleasance One at 7:30 p.m. every evening. And what else? Oh, buy a badge at gofasterstripe.com/badges if you want to help us make more podcasts. I think I'm going to be eBaying some stuff as well, maybe including the Lannister question book that is now full, which is signed by all the guests who I had during that time, apart from Rob Delaney and Sharon Hogan, who I forgot to ask. But anyway, let's crack on and watch this final Rahulastapur Rahumol, and then I will have the rest of my lovely day off. I'm very tired. Thank you very much. Richard Terry's meaning in life. So to talk to us about the future, we have the host of The Digital Human, and she is also a doctor of social psychology. Will you please welcome Alex Krotowski? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming out. Please sit down, pull up a microphone. Thank you for coming. What is the Doctor of Social Psychology? What does that mean?
Well, basically it's a psychologist, yeah. Right? So somebody who looks at people's brains, or at least looks at their behaviors, and decides why they're influenced by things is other people. In short, it's basically, it gives me license to watch people at dinner parties.
Okay.
That's pretty much all it does, which is fine because I quite like doing that anyway.
So. I like doing that as well. I'm going to call myself a social psychologist as well. You're going to tell us about the future. How do you know what's going to be in the future, first of all?
I've been there. I've seen it. Well, basically, because we are in the future right now.
Well.
Yeah, no.
Now we are.
Right now and ready.
Now. No. Yeah.
It was actually kind of cool. I went to Tokyo a few years ago, and what really freaked me out is everybody was saying to me, it's going to completely blow your mind. It's, you know, it's like nothing you've ever experienced before. The culture shock is going to be out of this world. And I remember walking through Tokyo and sort of looking down streets and realizing that most of the popular culture that I'd immersed myself in for the last however many years, I guess it was 20 years, 30 years at that point, was based in Japan, whether it was people like William Gibson, authors like William Gibson, or anime or computer games or whatever. So as I was walking through Tokyo, I was able to kind of point down a street and say, oh, look, that's the future over there. And oh, no, that's the future over there. So I have actually been...
I have been to the future. Japan.
Yeah. That's pretty much. You know, there's the sushi belt. That's the future.
That is pretty good. The first one of those I saw blew me away. I didn't even know what sushi was, let alone that it could travel.
Did you try and get on?
It was amazing. It was on a train the first time I saw it as well. It was on a little train going round.
That's even more future than I've been in.
It was in Melbourne. They didn't have it in the UK then, 10 years ago. So what do you think is going to happen in the future? Do you think that the film Terminator could ever happen in real life?
Well, as a social psychologist, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm kind of the dystopian fantasy. Oh, yeah. I've always been a bit of a fan of dystopias, whether it's Brave New World or even someone as more contemporary like Margaret Atwood, Oryx and Crake.
I love Margaret.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff I've always really sort of enjoyed watching people imagine the destruction of society. And so that just kind of fits into the canon, basically.
But it's interesting. I mean, I think that the point I made in one of the sketches is that science and technology has really helped improve our lives immeasurably, and yet all fiction about science, nearly all of it, is about it destroying the world or making things bad, and how nature is best.
Yeah, well, most fiction, you know, especially science fiction or technology fiction, you look back at the 60s and it's all very set. It's all social commentary. It's like Jonathan Swift doing, you know, doing all of his work back when he was doing it. And you see the stuff like the Andromeda Strain in the 60s, and you see more contemporary science fiction. It's basically predicting the future as it's all going to go to hell in a handbasket, which is kind of fun because that allows us to say, hold on a second, we don't need it to be that way. But on the other hand, we also have things like Star Trek, which have predicted the future by creating magical things.
Yeah.
That geeks have said, okay, fine, I'm going to make it my life's goal to make that. And that's why we have teleporters now. I'm still working on it. But
that is, it has made probably the mobile phones that do that.
Yeah.
That's only because of Star Trek.
Oh, my God. The first time I had one of those, I was like, it'll be me. It was absolutely brilliant. But now, of course, we've got these things, which are, I mean, this is the future. This is more the future than anything that I've ever seen. I just got, this is a new phone that was brought back to me from the U.S. Thank you very much, Ben, because I was sick and tired of hitting my other one and saying, work, God damn it, why don't you work? My expectations of the future had moved on. But this thing is just absolutely unbelievable. This is the more intelligence than many of the people that I know, which is a little bit unfortunate. But, you know, if you count Google as your friend, then absolutely, it's out of this world. So although those flip top things were cool, it was just a gimmick. That is the future.
Well, it is. And when you think, you know, even if you could go back 15 years and give me 15 years ago one of those, my mind would be blown. You probably would die of shock. It's like, you know, it's like when you imagine if you went back to medieval times and gave someone anything from the future, it would be, but you can only back 15 years and give me one of those, I go, can't believe it.
Well, you probably wouldn't. And that's the amazing thing about these touchscreen devices in particular. That was the first time I opened up a touchscreen smartphone. I knew that was it. Like, that was literally it, because there were no instructions. Now, most of the new technology that we've had, you know, sort of looking towards the future, has always come with completely illegible instructions for how to use it, and often in 5 different languages with at least 1 page missing. This completely eradicated that. You opened up the box, and all it said was, touch me. And it was so, you know, welcoming and inviting, and you just had to do it. And suddenly you realized you'd cross the Rubicon. You were there, man, and you had, you know, you were suddenly in this whole new world of interfaces. And that was, so you probably would have been perfectly fine. Probably would have been, I can't really, your brain dribbling out of your ear like in Barton Fink, probably wouldn't have happened because of the iPhone. Maybe some of the other things that are out there right now, but.
And I was just backstage, you know, I was doing some research that I should have done like 2 weeks ago that I did during the interval.
Thankfully, you briefed me on this. I just want to say that.
I was reading about an article in The Guardian about the guy who came up with the Gaia theory of the Earth, but he also thinks that human beings are going to and robots are going to become sort of one, or in the future humanity will be, robotics will be part of the human beings. I presume not biologically. I presume we'd always have to add it on. It's not like, you know, when things evolved, it was like things did kind of evolve together, didn't they? Sometimes two creatures kind of became one creature. But I don't think, like, a baby's going to be born with an iPhone in its hand.
With 9 months practice. Right here. It's like,
But, you know, the actual technology is going to connect with humanity in that way. Do you think, is that something that's likely to happen? We're going to become semi-robot?
Well, there are many different theories on this. And the most popular one, at least in the creator's own mind, Ray Kurzweil, he's a philosopher and thinker about the future. I have to put on like a big American accent to say that, you know, I'm a philosopher and thinker of the future. I suppose it's more a Carl Sagan voice. Anyway, moving on. Ray Kurzweil, currently at Google, and he's devised or is sort of promoting this theory called, oh, good Lord, help me. Thank you, the singularity. I'm going, it's synchronicity. No, it's not synchronicity. Serendipity. No, it's not serendipity. Thank you, the singularity. And the singularity is this idea that our intelligence and robots' intelligence are going to sort of achieve parity at some point. And then, of course, we're going to have the Terminator moment in which Skynet becomes sentient and then, you know, like the ants, they become our rulers. And by the way, I do just want to point out that I've been having an ant invasion as well.
There you go,
so
see.
Synchronicity there. Anyway, so there's that theory that's out there that people have been playing with for a little while, and then we've got this Gaia theory about how it's all just part of the universe, and we're all going to converge and merge into technologies, and artificial intelligences are going to support and help, and then eventually move beyond us. And I don't know if you saw the film Her. Did you see Her?
No.
It was a really actually a lovely film set in the very near future about an operating system that develops a sort of sentience, that, that develops an intelligence beyond its original owner. I thought it was quite a thoughtful, thought-provoking film as well. Another thing that we were talking about backstage is that you know, some people think that riding a bicycle means that you're a cyborg. It's anything that a technology does to enhance your sort of physical person, whether it's robotic, as we would imagine it now, you know, the sort of the I'm doing the robot dance from the 80s here, just to point that out. I never thought I would do that on a stage. Dancer, I am not. But, you know, robots or robot dogs or robot cars or whatever it is, those things may not converge into our brains at any point in the near future, but certainly the way that we use technologies, whether it's a pen or an iPhone or whatever it is, we are all cyborgs, man, unless you completely reject them. I'm definitely a cyborg. I've got contact lenses in. I've got fillings. I've had braces. You know, I have...
A filling doesn't make you a robot.
I am... You have no. I can hear. I've got the old. I've got the old style, you know. So it's actually an antenna. I can pick up different signals from around. It's a way, I suppose, of people kind of trying to come to terms with either utopian or dystopian of the way that we are integrating these scientific advances, these technological advances into our worlds. And a bicycle, absolutely, at one point, it was a phenomenal device that people were like, what is this thing? It shouldn't actually work. It's changing our society. Whoa, was the kind of general opinion about them. And so people who were riding them were, they were cyborgs.
Not penny farthings, though.
A very, very good friend of mine who lives in London is one of the world penny farthing champions. so I'm sure Kat Young-Nicol would have something to say about that. Right. And if people happen to be in London sort of around the first couple of weeks of June, in the center of London is the Smithfield Meat Market. And every year there's this bike race or a series of bike events called the Nocturne. And every year, Kat competes in the Penny Farthing Championship that goes around Smithfield. Yeah. So if you want a bit of the future past future, then go there.
If you want to be a world champion or something, just choose something that no one else does.
You have no idea. Seriously, she's champion in Tasmania, but she's not champion in England.
No.
Anyway, that's a whole different story. But yeah, it's bloody, it's phenomenal.
Because there's another bloke in England with a penny farthing. And he can sit on it without falling off. So he's the world champion in England.
They're not easy to ride, I'll tell you that. Oh, my goodness gracious.
So what can you tell us about how society and social interaction is going to change in the future? I mean, I don't know how you know any of this stuff. But are you just guessing, or is it definitely going to happen? Is all this stuff... I mean, there's this idea of... we were talking actually about the megacities program that Andrew Marr did, and there's a lot of these very solitary, like flats in these big buildings, and you're sort of on your own. Is social interaction, do you think, going to become us all just sitting in a little cubicle, never going out and interacting with holograms? And
absolutely, that is the future. What a shame! I'm going to be completely out of a job because I'll have to watch the dinner parties on a screen, and everybody else will be on screens. No, I mean, a lot of the research that I've been doing over the past sort of 10-15 years has basically been applying what we know about human social interactions and what we hold to be self-evident, what we hold to be part of our humanness, and looking at it in technologies. So things like trust, for example, or love, or any of these other kind of things that we think of as quite human, quite difficult to program, to sort of to reduce into ones and zeros. We still do those things even if we are in technologies. You know, people still develop trust with one another, even via mediated technologies. We still fall in love, all of that kind of stuff. So, but at the same time, those things can't necessarily, they can't capture, they can't replicate, they can't synthesize these sort of non, these human elements, these sort of soft, squishy, messy bits of us, these inconsistencies, right? And so we will always need to have physical contact, if just for procreation, because you know what, it's fun. Why would we want to, why would we want to get rid of that? But you know what I mean? We will still have to have the sights, the sounds, and the smells of one another in order to socially interact, because we haven't yet been able to replicate or to synthesize that experience. I have hope. I'm although I enjoy reading dystopias, I think it's possibly because I am a utopian, and you know, it gives me the hope that we will be able to develop, you know, the transporter devices that get us from here to there, like Mike TV or you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Star Trek. I'm optimistic that human beings will still be human beings and social experiences, our social psychology will still exist, because if it doesn't, I'm going to be out of a job. But also because I think that that is a bare element about humanity.
If they do make transporters, though, the danger is that, because it could just be creating a copy of you somewhere else.
That's right.
And then that
smaller.
Could, yeah.
And smaller.
They could
smaller.
Get smaller, or they could become evil, or they could pretend that they're you, but they're not you. And then
it's
go around
exciting.
Doing
well, an army good. Instead of an army of ants. Yeah. You, it could be that what you had in your
an army
what,
of future your, transporters,
very small people that had somehow accidentally, like in The Fly, crossed yeah. over and had become ants. So yeah. you killing those ants was actually killing people.
That's right. Still, that's just funny. A human life. It's just a life in it. In the infinity of the universe, what's the difference between an ant and a human? Not much. That's my defence.
That's a bit metaphysical. I'm going to stand back from that one. That's not part
of
my.
Do you think
remit.
Though that? I mean, because people say social media is. I find social media. I wish I'd had it when I was in my 20s.
Really?
Yeah, because I was sitting in a little pod, not interacting with anyone. So at least you were interacting with people via. Being able to say, hey, hi. I was just sitting going, oh, it'd be nice if someone rang up. For 10 years. So it would have been, if there'd just been Twitter and I could have gone, hey. That would have been something. So, but I think in a way.
Not with that kind of
I'm so alone. In a way, it fosters social interactions. I mean, it creates more social interactions than, you know, because you can, A, you can contact anyone in the world, but B, if you are alone or if you are, you know, like it's after a gig, if I'm in a town, in a hotel somewhere, I can tweet, whereas before I'd just sit in the bar drinking on my own thinking, oh. But now I can have a chat with people. So that's a improving social interaction and communication.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily improving it, but I wouldn't say that it's doing anything bad to it either.
No.
I would just say that it's we're experiencing it in simply in a mediated way. So I've done quite a bit of research looking at things like status updates or looking at tweets and all that and what they actually mean. Again, going back to the kind of psychology of who we are, why it is that we're compelled to tweet about our breakfasts, why we're compelled to tell our friends what we're doing on Facebook. And there's a researcher at Oxford whose name is Danica Radunovic. I finally have been able to pronounce that. It's taken me quite a long of standing in front of a mirror just saying Danica Radunovic. Anyway, what she has theorized is she's looked at some anthropologists from the early part of the 20th century, the 1920s and 1930s, and she analyzed what they called phatic communication, which is basically the, hey, how are you, what's up, lovely weather we're having, those types of sort yeah. of those types of nonsensical, sort of meaningless utterances. And she describes things like tweets and status updates and social media as basically us saying, hey, how you doing? Nice weather we're having. Good to see you. It's kind of the exact same thing. It's yeah. just that it's done via a mediated technology. So yeah, that you don't have to sit in a bar on your own eating your way through the peanuts and drinking your way through a bottle of whiskey on your own anymore, because you can now sort of tweet at the same time.
I am drunk.
I am eating my way through.
I have a nut allergy. I didn't think this through.
All of the who here has any adrenaline. It's part of our sort of our natural human social interaction that we've just simply transported into this new environment. So I do have hope for the future, but you know, if we do need to sit in boxes and drink ourselves to the bottom of a bottle of whiskey, then at least we can chat with other people.
It'll be space whiskey by then, though.
Space
it would have changed.
Whiskey.
It'll be very different. What will sex be like in the future? Will it be the same, or will it be there if it got some extra holes?
Oh man, if you could see his face close up right now, it's a little bit creepy. That was properly like.
Properly erotic, and it turned her on. That's what she said.
Ooh, can I get up there?
It was so sexy, I've made her pregnant.
Well done. 5 months, that was fast. But yeah, the question about sex is really interesting, because sex, we still want sex. We still want the physical experience of sex. But there are now quite a lot of fascinating mediated devices that allow you to experience sexual pleasure not in the same room or even on the same continent as somebody else. So there is a community. There's quite a lot of communities actually out there who are playing around with these things called teledildonics, which every time I which every time I say that out loud, oh God! I have actually made my editor at The Guardian blush with that one before. Do we need to talk about this again, Alex? I'm like, but it's really interesting. They're going, oh my God! So teledildonics—you can look it up on the internet if you wish. You could probably find communities who are doing it. They do all kinds of fascinating things with devices, and you know, from far away, remote devices, and all that. But on a more intimate, I suppose, level, that's not intimate like that. There's also the technologies that we're using, whether it's things like video conferencing for just sort of face-to-face chat, not in any way hanky-panky, but also other what they're calling haptic devices, which are, for example, there's a company in Japan, unsurprisingly, that that when you're talking with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever on the phone, then it sort of rumbles slightly so that it's as if they're giving you a kiss. So there's different ways that you can create these kind of intimacies, even if you're not in the same space. But obviously, you don't really want to replace a good thing. Really, you don't want to.
If you could get a really good robot doll of Amy Pond, for example. And
for
then,
example.
Then
and you wouldn't have to go through...
One.
You wouldn't have to steal her hair.
No. So it would all be good.
Do the cloning thing.
What if they had... What if you were able to transport things? You'd be able to transport your sperm into people's ovaries and impregnate them.
Without them knowing.
Yeah.
With just sort of spontaneous... I think that there's a book about that. Right? A whole religious spectrum about that. Yeah, that could work. I can imagine there would be some new legislation associated with that and interesting sort of prophylactic clothing.
That's really one to watch out for.
Yep.
I've thought of that.
Yeah, you heard it here first, folks.
Do you think the film Space Camp could ever become true in real life?
I bloody well hope so. And I want to be on that plane. Yeah. Well, it's not on a plane. That was
an
amazing
shuttle.
Flick.
I remember seeing Space Camp. Oh. When some kids got on the space shuttle and when it got sent off by mistake.
It was Apollo 13, but for kids.
Could never happen.
Oh, it was brilliant.
They've got checks in to stop the space shuttle going off.
Human error. That's what happened. It was all about the human error. That was an amazing film. I remember exactly where I was when I saw that, and that made me want to go to space camp. I want to go to space camp and be sent to the moon.
And do you think human beings are going to evolve into a different species?
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, no, because I mean, why should we be the end? I don't feel like I'm any kind of sort of, you know, I'm not the superhuman that I, you know.
That's why we booked you. It's been a misunderstanding.
Oh no! You're going quick to cut. but you know, why should we have the mighty hubris that we are the end all be all of evolution? Mm. You know, we still have appendices, not, you know, see appendix A, B, and C, but you know, we have these little dangly things that we're not really sure what they do, inside our bodies, that is. But yeah, like, you know, they occasionally explode, don't they? And we're not really sure what they're for. Eventually, maybe they may disappear. So we can't possibly think that we're the end all
be
all.
So in the future, there might be human beings, but they just won't have an appendix. It's a terrifying vision. and with medical advancements, though, the next generation after
mine...
Not a
medical doctor, right? I just want to say...
Well, no, but you might, I know a bit about this, so you might know a bit about this. But do you think... Well, A, is disease going to be wiped out?
Which completely, seems, no. No.
You don't think so?
No, because, again, diseases evolve. Bacteria evolves. Viruses evolve. Yeah. We can't, you know, we are not at the end, man. We got to keep going forward, because otherwise, what's the point?
But the next generation is meant to be like the first immortal generation, in that their life will be, should be prolonged long enough. I mean, you know, it doesn't stop them being run over by a bus.
But
and
you would...
I think eventually you would want to kill yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, our life can be prolonged that long.
So I took a really fascinating class in college I found fascinating. It was called Death Education. Bit morbid. I was a goth. I don't know if that comes out. But it was such an interesting class, and we were talking, it was looking at the sociological, the psychological, the biological, the chemical, all these different elements, the religious elements of death, and sort of looking at it from different frames, different points of view. And the now sadly deceased teacher, I was just reading about him not that long ago, strangely enough. He said, listen, if even medical technology keeps our brains alive and all the various organs alive that keep our consciousnesses alive, our skin would turn to mush. Like, we are not physically built to live as sort of biological beings forever. And this is where these technological solutions like Kurzweil's stuff and like, you know, like Lovelock's stuff come in, is that somehow we can upload ourselves to our devices. So there's a lovely book written by a friend of mine named Cory Doctorow. And Cory's very first, I think it was his first full book, and it was called Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. It's a lovely, straightforward, lovely little read. And it's, you know, set in the near future. There are great wars at Disneyland between the people who want to keep the animatronics and the people who want to create the experiences in which you sort of plug something in the back of your head and you have this very immersive experience, the Hall of Presidents and all of this kind of thing. Why just watch a bad robot of a president when you can be a president type of thing? But one really lovely idea that he explored in this book was this idea of short-term future, we would be able to upload ourselves to a technology, like a backup, like we do for our phones or for our computers. And then if we die, you know, we do it maybe once a day or something like that. If we die, then we just simply download ourselves back into this new body and whatever. But what he was exploring, because that's not a new idea, it's been played around in science fiction before, but what I think he did beautifully, really, really lovely way, was explore this idea of suicide. Just don't back yourself up. Just leave it for as long as possible. Have you ever done that with, like, your devices? You're like, ha-ha, it tells me that I haven't backed up for 21 days. And if everything goes horribly wrong, then I'm going to lose those 21 days of all of that stuff that I've done. And I love that idea of, you know, the sort of the social outcomes of these technological solutions for keeping us alive forever and ever. We'll have all these new social questions. What happens if we don't back ourselves up? How is that going to separate us from the people who are, you know, religious about backing ourselves up?
Yeah, but if you back yourself up all the time, you can just keep going back and doing it until everything comes out your way, can't you?
Pretty much. Well, you don't sort of reverse the trend. You don't go previous back. You go to the last back. So if you
go back to the last back and you're just about to put £1 million on black, and then
but
go
you're
back
not
and
rewriting
put
it's like
red.
You could do so, see now you've taken it to the next level, man. You've taken it to a whole different kind of science
it's
fiction.
Like Groundhog Day, you basically be able to do Groundhog Day for your own life.
Brilliant.
Until you get it right and can play the piano. No, maybe not.
I watch that every year on Groundhog Day. It's true.
And do you think What will we do when all the oil and stuff runs out?
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's coming. Because it's going to run out in like 5 years in the UK. I heard that there's no fossil fuels in the UK in 5 years' time. And France is 2 years' time. So, fuck them.
Water?
They'll be swimming across. We'll be chucking our oil in there.
Paddling away. Yeah. When all the oil runs out, I'm sure we will come up with different solutions for powering our devices and for keeping our TVs on standby. I'm sure, absolutely, we will come up with those because, you know, we are on a road to nowhere. We're on an inevitable path towards... You know, little children swimming.
I think science is our hope for the future that there will.
But at the same time, it's going to destroy us. So we need to make a decision here. We need to figure out what it's going to do.
It'd be all right. Someone will come along and save us.
Exactly. Roll the dice, man.
Be all right. And do you think we'll ever be able to travel in time?
I bloody well hope so. We are right now.
Yeah. Very slowly. 1 second at a time.
Pretty bloody fast.
I'd like to go like, well, the theory is you might be able to travel forwards, but not backwards.
And that's why you wouldn't be able to put $1 million on black.
Yeah.
So that answers your previous question.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. It would be kind of neat if we did, but where would you go? When would you go?
I'd go to the Eloy and the Moorcocks.
Would you?
Yeah.
That's, yes. You'd go underground.
I'd like the Eloy. The Eloy were pretty cool. Yeah. Don't blame him. In the 1960s film, he goes back, doesn't he? Stays there.
Yeah.
Why not?
Have you... That film actually is quite funny because he sets up the time machine chair in front of basically a window at I don't know, Selfridges or something. And the only way that you know you're going back in time is because the clothing on the mannequin goes back in time and suddenly, you know, it's like, whoa, we're back in time where people are wearing bonnets. Okay, let's go out here. It's brilliant.
Well, also, you know, I care very much about time travel and the logic of it. And my problem with the time machine, that version of the time machine, why doesn't he see himself arriving back a week later when he comes back? That's my question to you, Time. I'm guessing this audience haven't seen the Rod Taylor
classic.
Time machine.
You must see it.
I've got it on my phone. We can just, if we all see them, I genuinely have. I'm going to put it on Apple TV. We're just going to sit here for the next, and then I'm going to say, why didn't he see himself coming back? Answer me that. Why was the door open? There's people at home going, he's so right. He's so...
That's
these
the same thing
here.
That happened in Back to the Future, the original, when he sees himself.
But they make it make sense.
Okay, in a way.
Can you all see that? Well, it must... Oh, there's no... it's loading. Here we go. See, this freaks me out. Would you think about, you know, if you were Rod Taylor and you'd made the time machine in 1960 and then... Then, in 50 years' time, someone was able to just watch it on a telephone. I mean, that would fuck with your mind. They're all nearly all still alive. When I watch films, this probably won't be on the program. This is just for my own. When I watch films, I quite often, and they're old films, I quite often go to Wikipedia so I can go to my wife. He's dead. He's dead. Dead. Oh, dead. They're near. Mrs. Watch is obviously dead, and a couple of the older guys are dead, but Rod's alive, and the old Scottish man's still alive. Leela's still alive. She's nice. She's not as nice looking as she was back then. The clock's going. There's clocks flying through space. That is the best. There's the Big Ben. Seriously, we're going to watch it. How long do you think you would sit here watching this on my phone, really straining to hear? Look, the time machine. Good. Is there anything else you would like to tell us about the future? One of my questions is how many people? And then I just ran out of ideas for that.
Some.
What about politics? Do you think politics and language and things like that, how will those things change?
We're just going to keep adding words, aren't we?
Yeah.
Adding words and adding concepts and politicians are going to keep spewing their rhetoric on one another and it's just all, I mean... All the questions that you're asking are about sort of, and it helps that, you know, you knew that I was a social psychologist, so you steered the questions in that direction as opposed to asking specifics about what happens when the oil runs out. Thank you for that, because I'd be right up the creek. But all of the questions and all the future scenarios are always about people. They're always about how we interact with one another. And as I said before, you know, it seems that we've been doing exactly the same. We've been coming up with religions. We've been coming up with politics. We've been doing governance and economies and all this, value, trade, trust, everything in exactly the same way. So I figure in the future we will still have these things. We might not recognize them. You know, Google might look, you know, really dated in 20 years' time.
Yeah.
You know, we might be having, you know, I was saying earlier that I moved to the UK in 1995, and around 1999 there was a series of TV programs on several channels. I love 1980 whatever. I love 1993. And
Andrew,
it got
Andrew
ridiculous.
Collins was in them all.
It got ridiculous because I remember it was 1999. It was like, next week, I love 1999. It was like, what are you talking about? Best cultural education I have ever had. Like, I learned more from that than I learned from sort of reading books about Britain. But, you know, we may be looking back at I love 2014 in, you know, 30 years' time and go, God, Google, that looks ridiculous. Why did you have those colors? You know, we might just be looking back and saying things look very different now, but ultimately it's going to be the same in the future. I have a hope for humanity. You're basically trying to back me into a corner and say, we're all going to die and society is going to be ruined and half the people are going to go underground and half the people are going to stay on top, and people on top are going to be happy and the people underground are going to be cannibalistic, and that's what you want me to say.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen, man. I'm really sorry. We might go to the moon, but we'll still end up doing exactly the same thing that we do now.
With the internet and, you know, just we're able to communicate with everyone in the world in a way that we couldn't in the past. So won't that just have an enormous social revolution in that I can presumably, you know, I could talk to someone in China and say, you know, we could discuss ideas and exchange ideas in a way that could never have been done before. And won't that create a massive revolution in society?
I would love that to be the case. And definitely the people who were, you know, the forefathers, the pioneers of the internet and the web, they were all about that. They were all about, we're going to have this big global group hug. But what's sort of panned out now, and, you know, this is 20-odd years hence, what's panned out now is that we don't talk to people necessarily on the other side of the world. We will talk to people within our own language groups, our own cultural groups. We have these quite sort of localized experiences online, mm-hmm. whether that's through our own nations, you know, and our neighborhoods and stuff like that, or it's sort of neighborhoods, communities of practice is what they're called. These people who are, you know, they think like us, they're like us, you know, they have the same opinions, they have the same politics, the same religions like us. And so one would hope that war would end because we can all chat to one another and find out that we all like Scooby-Doo. That would be brilliant. But unfortunately, you know, we're not doing as much of that as we had hoped. We're still, you know, we're still tribal. We still can't quite cope with the idea that when we tweet about our breakfast, it could potentially go really, really far. When we stick that embarrassing photograph of ourselves vomiting outside the pub, it may end up that, you know, it's not going to go too far. It's going to go to your next recruiter, unfortunately. And that's unfortunately the sort of the world that we're living in. We actually live almost, rather than this great global village with this wonderful group hug, we've got these almost two close communities where if you split up with somebody, they're still there on your Facebook feed and you can't stop hearing about them. You know, it just, it can become quite claustrophobic. So, unfortunately, war is still going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, we are still going to have differences of opinion, even though we can bond over cat videos and you know, memes and stuff like
that. We all like those.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm bringing you down, man.
No, it's good. It's
we're
good.
All going
to
end
positive.
Up... We're going to end up being Morlocks.
It's mainly positive. Seem quite positive about the future, and you yourself are creating a tiny probe that you're sending out into the future that will
go
be there.
Forth.
That will be there in maybe 100 years' time after
we're
not here. So
you
that's
can't
quite
kiss
exciting.
My belly, though.
I don't want to do
that. Would just be weird.
I've done that to Greg Davis, but I don't think I'll do that to you.
That would be a bit weird.
You're the one who brought it up.
Well, you were talking before.
My wife's just there.
Sorry about that.
But do you mind if I just kiss this?
It wasn't you.
You're not my wife. I mind you. We'll see how it goes. Well, look, this has been really, really fantastic. Thank you very much for coming here. Will you please give it a big round of applause to Alex Gradosky? Thank you. How'd you like them sky potatoes?